I'm Bob Boylan with a Plus One podcast from All Songs Considered. The first time I saw the soulful singer Moses Sumney was in a church in Iceland. The Los Angeles-based singer was laying down loops with his guitar, and the sounds that he made and the songs that he sang made me eager to hear an entire album from this talented man. In the 3 years since, he's played with James Blake, Sufjan Stevens, Solange, David Byrne. He's also about to release his first album. It's called Aromanticism, and his maturity and thoughtfulness throughout these 11 songs made this album totally worth the wait. I wanted to try something different for this interview and the release of Aromanticism. So Moses Sumney and I listened to the entire record together, nonstop, and as the record played, we had a conversation inspired by what we heard. He was in New York, I was in Washington, D.C. When I hit the first cut called Man on the Moon, Reprise, a fascinating discussion unfolded around Aromanticism, a record, Moses says, is about lovelessness as a sonic dreamscape. So you kind of started with the title, didn't you? Isn't that one of the ways this record got going?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I picked the name of the album first and then wrote the songs to the name, but really to the concept.
That's such a strange thing to do. That. So what was in your head? You came up with this word, aromanticism?
I want to say that I came up with it, but I didn't. I found it on the internet.
Yeah, but the dictionary doesn't know it.
The dictionary doesn't know it yet. You know what really happened was I found it, and it perfectly encapsulated how I was feeling at the time and what I'd been thinking about but hadn't been able to name. And then I realized, I quickly was like, wait, has anyone else called their album this? And I was like, no. And so I swooped. But then I was like, I hope no one else does it in the next 3 years. But it's not as popular as I thought it was going to be. So
let's listen to a little bit of this. This is the kind of the second cut, but the first real song on the record. It's called Don't Bother Calling.
I'm not a body, the body is but a shell. Somebody, but suffering is suffering still. No grasp on reality. The world is a wonderland scene. I don't know.
You sing here, Don't Bother Calling. I'll call you. Who are you singing to?
Debt collectors, primarily. But it's just like, oh God. the narrator of the song is singing to a potential lover or romantic interest. Who's not just calling, but probably calling for questions such as, what are we? What is this? Where are we going? When are we getting married? Etc.
You need a solid, but I'm made of liquid.
You need a solid, but I'm made of liquid.
Oh, that is such a beautiful line.
Thank you.
When you... Right. Okay, so you start with a record title, right?
Yeah.
And things begin to unfold because you've got to start someplace. Do you have a sense when you write a song? Like some writers write a song to find the meaning in their life and who they are.
Yeah.
And some people have a real clear vision of who they are. And the song and the songwriting is a document or a reaffirmation of who they are.
Mm.
Wow. Where do you fall?
Yeah, this was definitely a self-discovery record, trying to figure out who I am, but also what my place is in the world. And with this tune, Don't Bother Calling, especially, my place in the universe and how I relate to other people. And And so there are many things about myself that I know and that I understand, but I always want music to be an interrogation of self and an interrogation of society. And so that's what I was trying to do with this music, calling forth things about myself that were uncomfortable and questioning them and then saying, what does this mean? What does this mean for me and for the people around me?
It's all done so gently. I mean, the catharsis or the release or the self-discovery doesn't happen with anger. As we go into the next tune, this tune is Plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cerebral, it's surreal. I love music and that has a vibe that you walk in a room and it's on and all of a sudden the room changes. That's what this music does. Mm-hmm. And it does it as an album. It doesn't flip. Like side B of the record doesn't have the punk side. It's a compliment for me to say that it has a very samey sound to it, in that it has a vibe to it, is how I mean.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that, because that wasn't fully intentional. I tried my best to make everything feel really connected and for the songs to flow into each other. But it was a challenge to me, because in my head, a lot of the songs were quite different from each other sonically. And it goes to some territory that's a bit different, but definitely my voice and a few production things are connecting thread. But yeah, a lot of that's accidental, I suppose, as well.
Let's listen to a little Plastic here. See my silhouette, so you're standing scared of me. First heard the line, my wings are made of plastic, I think that you're saying to this person that you're not real, that's what plastic means to me. Mm-hmm. Not that it's fragile or you're not made of porcelain, but you're made of something that's artificial or man-made or what
Yeah, I think it's a... I'm talking about strength, and talking about strength as a performance, and just saying, like, yo, I know I seem, like, really impenetrable or impervious, but that is an act, essentially.
Wow.
It's a confession.
Do you feel like that... Is that a younger you or a current you?
That was definitely a much, much younger me. And I've obviously been trying to channel sensitivity and portray that. But I think that really I was thinking of beyond myself, but a lot of artists or people who operate to any level in the public eye, there is an amount of, I think, strength that is... supposed for you by others, and I wanted to address that, like the idea that, like, oh, I can't be sensitive because I seem to be incredibly strong. So that was a younger me, but it carries through for sure.
And should more and more fame come, and you're faced with more and more people in your life and people looking up to you, do you feel strong enough to face that? Because this album's gonna get give you a lot of attention, and that stuff that happens when you become known is creepy, weird, and shakes all the innards up inside of your whatever might be your insecure self. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I who knows what will happen, but I feel pretty prepared. I feel pretty ready, and I'm really honest with myself and with other people, so I know how to be like back up.
What are we listening to now?
This is called Quarrel.
Let's listen to a bit. Tell us a little about the writing of the song. You talked earlier in the song about in morning we'll reveal the spoils of night, yeah. The walls of Jericho lies a heart of stone.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about the Battle of Jericho, which is an old biblical tale. And I was thinking about privilege and power and the idea that two people in a relationship can be coming from different ends of the spectrum when it comes to societal power, and that in our interpersonal relationships we like to think of ourselves as equals and as individuals, but what we don't often realize is that we have either the weight of the world on our shoulders, depending on how much privilege we bring to the table, or the support of the world to back us up. And so I was just kind of trying to address the idea that two people can be equals when in the bedroom or at the dining room table, when out in the world they are not.
What about in a schoolroom, when you're somebody who's sort of traveled the world, and as a correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that you went to live in Ghana for a while, where yep. your family is from, and you were a kid with an American accent, and that wasn't easy. Did you feel a sense of privilege then, or?
I suffered because of my privilege. Uh-huh. I didn't have the faculty to acknowledge that I had, Western privilege, or having been able to travel.
You were how old then?
I was 10 years old. I lived there from 10 to 16. And that's actually a good parallel to draw to this song, because I was pretty heavily oppressed on an individual level.
By your own peers, yeah.
Yes, by my peers, by my classmates, and a bit by my teachers. But what I didn't realize then was that I was coming from a place of privilege, and that ultimately I would have it better out in the world because I have an American passport.
This song is still Quarrel, and it takes a shift somewhere around
the 4-minute mark. There's a bit of a reprise.
I'm wondering how all of that stuff that you talk about with school and peers and children, of course, you've come back to the States and you deal in a different place in American life as what goes through your brain? I mean, that's a big flip, right?
In terms of what?
You sort of hinted at it, which is that in some ways you're but privilege, having this flip.
I have varying levels of privilege based on where I am in the world. Yeah. Yes, as an American. Yeah, definitely. It's fascinating. As a Black American, my experience is quite different, obviously. It's depending on where I land, where the plane lands, the level of privilege is different. But it's just kind of fascinating. I think that everyone has privilege. Everyone. And at a varying degree, depending on who you are, what you are, and where you are, it changes. Most things in this world, it's dynamic. And so I'm appreciative of the perspective that I have from both sides of the pond.
Coming up, there's a piece that I found. I went when I listened to this record the first time. I went back and listened to it again and again. It's very short. Mm-hmm. It's this moment coming up. It's a little piece called Stoicism, and it's as a parent, it really is this beautiful moment. It's about your mom. I'm going to let this play.
So dramatic.
Oh, but poignant, beautiful.
Like, thank you.
if anybody who might have been driving didn't catch what just happened, there's a moment where you just mom would drop you off and glance back, and before you walked out of the van, you'd say I love you, and she'd turn around and say thank you. You know, that never, I mean, it hardly happens between parent and child, I'm going to say.
Really?
I think it's a rare thing, at least in this country. I don't know. At least
the acknowledgement
and verbally acknowledgement. There are more often gestures, but the verbal acknowledgement was so powerful to me.
Yeah, it's a hard one to talk about.
Say that one more time.
It's a hard one to talk about.
You're very close to your mom, obviously.
Yeah. Kind of.
Oh, okay.
Kind of. I'm like,
Should we let this one go?
We should let this one go.
The next song on the record's called Lonely World. You want to listen to that?
How poignant. Perfect.
Here
let's
we
go.
Light is nice. We haven't talked at all about how the heck you do this. I mean, when I saw you in a church in Iceland 3 years ago, it was you and a loop pedal. Remind me, was it a keyboard or guitar maybe?
There's a guitar.
Name, right?
Yeah, yes, guitar, yeah.
And that was it. So what's going on here to make this record? Who's on it?
Oh, man, there's just so much, so many people. I worked with I co-produced the whole record with a few different people, and so the story is different on each song, but on this song particularly, I worked with this producer from Los Angeles named George Lenev, who saw me play at like Tex, like this little restaurant in LA. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No, I'm not, but I love it.
It's tiny, in like 2014. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's just a few songs that needed to be bigger, that needed to bring in some power. So there's like a horn player on this, Thundercat plays bass on this, Ian Chang from Sunlux plays drums on this
greatest
song.
Drummer on planet Earth. Yeah,
I truly believe he is the greatest drummer on planet Earth, and it took us a few people to get it right. But I wanted to kind of, you know, the song's called Lonely World, but I wanted to explore like what happens in the recess of your mind when you're alone, like how crazy it can sound.
Let's hear. You talk about this record as sort of a concept album about lovelessness as a sonic dreamscape.
Yeah.
And this is the sonic, beautiful sonic dreamscape, for sure.
Yeah, thanks. This one's like a bit of a nightmare. It's like 1 foot into a nightmare and 1 foot not.
But the next song is going to be about making out in a car.
Which is a dream. It's my dream.
Your dream as in desire, or your dream as in...
This is my favorite pastime.
Not many words in this song. You want to just say them before they happen?
I'm not trying to go to bed with you. I just want to make out of my car. That's the lyric.
And who's... Oh, there it is. Go to bed with you. I just want to make out in my car. I'm not trying. True story.
You know, yes. I'm like, what? Yeah, it's just very true.
This is the hit on the record, by the way. How much of that is you and just a loop pedal, or is this?
Well, that's
much
all done.
That?
That's all done like straight into a computer, but it's a lot of vocal layers. Mm-hmm. I'm very annoying to record because there are heaps and heaps of vocal layers, and this song also has heaps of flute and clarinet layers as well. So
would heaps be more than 8 tracks of vocal?
Oh yeah, definitely. Uh-huh. Because if there's maybe on that part, I think there's maybe 6 or 7 parts, you know, including octaves, and then there has to be a double or triple for each voice, and that's just in that section, you know. And then this current section, you know, it's the same stories, like probably like at least four parts. So definitely more than 8 tracks. I mean, sometimes I get up to more, like 50 tracks of just vocals. There's little nuances.
Wow. I remember back in the analog days, there was a group called 10cc. I don't know if you ever knew
I
them,
love that. I love their song, I'm Not in Love, right? Not to be cliche.
But you know how many vocal... I actually don't remember the number of how many vocals, but there was a number going around that was triple figure of multi-tracking voice there. Someone will correct me for the real number, but it was an awful lot. It was an awful lot more than I'd ever heard laid down on track before.
Yeah, I think it's really worth it. But sometimes you're the only one who can notice how many layers there are and if it matters. On scroll that's rolled up and rolled in. The cocoon-eyed baby's swollen, clenched hand.
This track mystified me. I had no idea what was going on. So it's called The Cocoon-Eyed Baby. Mm-hmm. We scrawl unwritten law of the land on scroll that's rolled up and rolled in. The cocoon-eyed baby's swollen, clenched hand.
A
scream, raw and grotesque, that soon he learns to suppress.
Yep.
And that took 3 months to do, right? 1 minute and 9 seconds.
I know.
I'm just kidding.
That was like the last song I made for the record. It's so funny. Yeah.
So nothing linear about the writing of the music on this?
No, not in terms of the arrangement, no. I kind of figured out all the sequencing afterward. But there's just so many songs that I cut that if there was ever like a linear arrangement, that there just couldn't be.
What do we listen to now?
This is called Doomed. It's the sunspot of the record.
Record is about romantic love or the absence of romantic love and what it means to people. You talk about the idea that we are such a culture based on pairs and it's so deep in our DNA. Even just going into a restaurant and there are a table for two and it's always set for, I mean, there's a always table and it's always set for two. You think it's part of the important part of our existence, or you think we overplay it, or...
Well, I think that's what I'm asking, trying to figure out with this record, but it's everything that we are familiar with is an important part of our existence, but then I also feel like it has been overplayed, but we don't know any other way, and I think love is definitely important and necessary. It's a necessary part of the society. So this isn't a rejection of that, but it's a question of like how much of this is genuine to our nature and how much of it, you know, is a political tool, a cultural tool for sameness, how much of it, you know, is patriarchal. Like there's so many things that I wonder.
Or default. I mean,
yeah. I think that anytime that there... society suggests that there is one way to be or there is one thing to strive toward, it should be questioned. And I think that this record came out of a personal desire to see a more varied, a more diverse, dynamic way of discussing romantic love.
Is that sort of, though, part of our privilege? And I say that ours as in a, you know, a country that... you can pretty much be guaranteed you'll have a roof over your head, that, you know, food's going to be on the table, that we can think deeper about that kind of existence, whereas if you're just struggling day to day, a deep sort of thinking...
I think that you can make the argument that, like, someone like me has more time to think about these things because of the privileges that I have, but I don't think that these are concerns that... someone wouldn't have just because they don't have as much economic privilege. I think that love is so universal and stretches across all cultures. Of course, I exist in Western society, so that is the framework from which I don't know, explore my perspective, but, you know, I have lived elsewhere, and I think that an absence of love is such a universal theme.
Are you more often absent of love than not in your adult life these days?
I love lots of things.
Beautiful.
And lots of people.
That's great. And we're coming to a cut called Indulge Me. Thank you. set the song up?
Yeah. Song is this the late night text you send your ex? Basically.
And which says what?
It says, indulge me, hey, do I still exist to you? Or do I still exist to anyone? Damn.
Indulge me. Have found others. I was lost in the rapture. Dead sea as barren as a star colored laughter.
There are people like myself who are so envious of this thing that you have, which is the voice. When did you figure out that you could do this?
Like in the last like 2 or 3 years.
Is that right?
Yeah, after people started writing about me and coming to my shows and asking me to play, and then at some point I couldn't ignore it. I was just like, oh, I guess I can sing. But I didn't grow up singing, really, not publicly, so I was quite late to realize it was a thing.
But the fact that they heard you sing means that there was something in you that wanted to be performing.
Oh, yes, my entire life I wanted to. It was the number one goal of my life, but I didn't know if I was any good is a thing.
Uh-huh. Well, having heard your EP and other music that you've done, the confidence, at least you're fooling me if it's not confidence, but the confidence that is in that's in these songs and in the singing is just beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, this record was definitely a turning point for me in that I finally was like, oh, okay, we can actually go for it vocally, because I'd finally had the confidence to do so.
You win the record on this, yeah?
Yeah, this is like probably the most vocal song. It's just when it's a painting. It's really just a painting that's mostly wordless, and it's got a vocal arrangement that, yeah, is reaching.
Who were the singers that inspired you? Who were the people who you sang along with?
Ella Fitzgerald, huge.
And
Brandy.
And where'd that come from? Because most kids are whatever. How old were you when you heard Ella?
I was 16 when I discovered Ella Fitzgerald. That's when I started. That's when we first had internet access. And I started going on YouTube. And I stumbled across her. And I think that changed my life.
Wow.
Massively.
Do you remember the song?
Yeah, there's a song called Imagine My Frustration, which I've only actually seen in video form. And then there's the one note samba, which is just her scatting for 6 minutes. those two like rocked me for sure.
Did you drive your family crazy at a 16-year-old age to trying to scat sing around the house?
You know, I definitely sang around the house, but I also like didn't. I would like close my door and then like hide and then, you know, do that kind of thing. So I don't think I drove them too crazy.
It sounds like a lot of your talent you kept to yourself.
Well, I was really shy, but then I was also kind of made to feel like you shouldn't. Music, come on, let's be realistic. Like, do something real with your life. So I just kind of kept quiet because I didn't want to be discouraged.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I think it's the reason why I sing so softly, actually, typically, is because I'm used to, like, kind of singing under my breath.
Well, those things that can be discomforting, the things that can scare you and all that, all add up to, in this case, gave you your style.
I mean, I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it for the world, Bob.
The final notes. That's beautiful.
Thank you. That's my record.
How long did it take to make this record?
Two mother effing long. It took three years. It took 3 years to make, and it's 36 minutes. It took 3 years to make 36 minutes of music.
12 minutes a year.
12 minutes a year, yeah. There was just so much writing, that went into that.
And when you say so much writing, that means so much tossing of writing, yeah?
Oh my gosh. I mean, truly and honestly, in the last 2 months of making the record, I cut 7 songs. But there was, you know, thinking of the concept, writing towards that concept alone took a long time, and then really finding the words and economizing those words and saying the most with as few words as possible took a lot of time. And then sculpting the sound was really the big thing that got me. Like, how do we make this sound? Like a dream.
You did it.
I hope so. I hope people fall asleep.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Really,
it's an honor.
Quite beautiful. Moses Sumney's new album is called Aromanticism. It's coming out September 22nd on Jag Jaguar. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.